We're going to call the meeting to order, come out of recess. Representative Dill has two bills. These are members, the first five bills, our local option sales tax bills. We are going to pass these without recommendation to the tax committee. They're going to make brief presentations. I need to make a couple of statements about these bills so the authors have time to work on them between now and then. Do you have that? Representative Dill, why don't you go ahead and talk about your bill. You have House File 1894 and House File 2059. When we have a quorum, we'll be recommending, or we'll be sending these to the tax committee without recommendation.
Okay, Madam Chair. Can I just do both bills at the same time? They're very similar.
Fine.
House File 1894 regards Cook County, which for members, I need to know that's up Lutzen, Tofty, Schroeder. It's the farthest county up in the Minnesota Arrowhead that Grand Marais includes all the way up to the gun plant. It's an entire countywide tax. They presently have a sales tax that is dedicated to the paying for bond indebtedness that has to do with the Cook County Hospital. The new proposal, the tax expires, that tax will expire when the bond indebtedness is paid off. The new tax will provide for, when approved by a special election, construction improvements to education centers, recreation centers, improvement to different parks and recreational facilities, construction and improvements at the Grand Marais Pool, and construction and improvements at the library. Now, I wanted to comment on that. You know, only 9% of the land in Cook County is taxable. I want to repeat that. 9% of all of the land in Cook County has any value as a taxable item for the county. That's 9%, because all of the rest is owned by the government in that county. Of that 9%, of the land, 61% of all of the property in the county on the 9% is seasonal recreational. People who don't generally live up there, but they come up there and they want services and they want amenities, and they just, there's no possible way that the 4,000 to 5,000 people living in that county could ever pay for that. So that's the reason for the tax. The city has a resolution outlining the entire structure of the tax. Unless there's questions on that particular bill, I'll go to the Ely.
Okay. Representative Dill, we do have an amendment that as soon as we have a quorum, we will adopt.
I was wondering, Madam Chair, if you want to do that amendment.
And members, it actually says that it's an amendment to Senate File 1771, but it actually matches up in language to the House file, so we're just going to change it to be House File 1894. But when we have a quorum, then we'll act on that.
Yeah, that's great. So I'll go to the Ely.
That would be great, Representative.
So the city of Ely isn't quite as bad off in terms of the taxable values and the people who come there. The city of Ely has not had a sales tax in the past. The council has gone back and forth on this many times, whether they want one, whether they don't want one, and they have decided in most recent years that they would like to have a local option sales tax, of course, subject to a referendum. And it would include kind of a regional idea that they're trying to provide services not only to the community, water and sewer, but also to two neighboring townships, which have, by and large, the largest amount of taxable property in that area, probably exceeding the value of Ely's taxable property. I haven't actually seen the figures, but I'm guessing from knowing the area that is the case. They also want to build a pool facility that will assist the rehabilitation stuff at their local hospital, as well as support the school, and then infrastructure improvements at the hospital. All of these, both of these bills, of course, the authority would expire when the bond indebtedness for these projects is fulfilled. It's not really rocket science on this. This is like many of the other, I serve on the tax committee, lots of proposals come before the tax committee like this. So with that, I'd be willing to answer any questions you have, Madam Chair, or members.
Questions from members. All right, I am going to read this, and I'm not certain if your bills have this issue or not, but some of the bills that will be for us that are the sales tax options have some issues. And so House research has found that some of the issues with the local option sales tax bills compared to what we usually do, some of them are not specific as to the projects to be funded with sales tax revenues. Some of the projects lack regional significance, and some of the bills don't specify an ending date on the authority to hold a referendum and impose a tax. So I encourage authors to work on these issues to fix their problems before they get to the tax committee. I do serve on the tax committee, so if they don't, I will know. All right. With that, Representative Dill, it doesn't appear as if anyone here has an issue. I will move these as soon as we have a quorum.
Okay. And then did you want to do the A1 amendment then when you have a quorum as well?
I will do that as well.
Okay. And that all that does is add the county, the Superior National Golf Course, and anybody that goes to Lutzen knows about the course, and it's been being paid for with tax already, and it just adds this as an additional item, and it's of regional significance, obviously, because it's a big attraction in the entire county.
Great. Thank you very much, Representative Dill. Representative Leader, I think I saw him walk into the room. Representative Leader has House File 1820. Representative Leader, we do not yet have a quorum. We will move this bill to the committee without recommendation. And I believe you were in the room when I was just talking about some of the issues with some of the people's bills. So with that, go ahead, Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, this bill is strictly a local sales tax bill for the city of Crookston. It's a 0.5% with a referendum. And I'd like to give a little background on it, the rationale behind it. If anyone has ever been in the city of Crookston, I only see one person that's been there in the group. The city of Crookston is laid out like a four-leaf clover. The river goes all the way around it. We have, in the city of Crookston for the last 15 years, assessed on each property $150 for flood rebuilding the dikes. But what's happened now, in one of the additions that we have to complete, we have two facilities that are basically hockey arenas, and they have to be removed for the new dike. And these arenas serve the University of Minnesota Crookston and the high school, and also a regional activity for the community. So what happens, these buildings will be torn down, and the arenas will be torn down, and they have to be replaced. The city of Crookston wants to levy a sales tax for the replacement cost of the buildings up to the amount of $10 million, and it also is by referendum. If the sales tax provision were to pass, they would have a referendum this fall, and actually the amount would be determined. The city could terminate the sales tax anytime up to that $10,000 limit. And that's basically it. It's really a needed situation because the buildings will be torn down this next year, and they'd like to replace it because whether you may realize it or not, the University of Minnesota Crookston has been a national championship in their category several times, and we have no facility for them or the high school, if you consider that, other than it's used for activities other than hockey. Also, it's the Civic Center, basically, and we're replacing two with one. We have two facilities that happen to be practically on the riverbank that will be torn down, and I think basically that's a quick overview, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you, Representative Leader. Questions from members?
Madam Chair, I do have resolutions that you can imagine from the City Council and all of that.
Absolutely. Thank you, Representative Leader. We do not yet have a quorum, so as soon as we get a quorum, we will be moving your bill to the Tax Committee without recommendation. That's what we're doing with all of these sales tax bills. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
All right, thank you. Members, the next sales tax bill, they're not in the room yet, but I failed to ask for public testimony on all of the sales tax bills. So is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against any of the sales tax bills that are on the agenda? All right, hearing none, we're going to move on to Representative Hornstein. I see that you're in the room. Representative Hornstein, you have a number of bills on the agenda, so please come to the table, state your name for the record, and let's go ahead. We don't yet have a quorum, so we can't move them. So go ahead, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members. I Glad to be back in front of this committee with some stuff that might not be quite as controversial as that. And to Representative Howe's disappointment. First bill is House File 1492. And under current law, the Met Council is allowed to discount bus passes when purchased by employers for use of their employees. And House File 1492 would allow the council to also discount bus passes when purchased by charitable organizations for use by their clients. So it does not require them to do so, but simply gives them permission. And I've asked Byron Lair from the United Way to give you some brief background to this proposal.
Go ahead, state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Byron Lair. I'm an employee of United Way in the Twin Cities. We currently fund 200 agencies in the Twin City metropolitan area. 87 of these agencies are actively involved in providing some form of transportation to their clients. Some of them have vehicles and provide their own transportation services. Others provide this by using bus tokens and the public transit system, which we definitely encourage. We have about 8 agencies that collectively spend just under $1 million each year buying bus tokens for their clients. And one of those agencies spends about half of that total. Right now, as Representative Hornstein has said, employers can be given a discount when they purchase bus passes or bus tokens for their employees. Charitable agencies who are using these tokens for their clients cannot. What House File 1492 would do is give the Met Council authority to discount those bus tokens. It doesn't require them to do it, but it gives them permission. We've discussed this with staff. The idea actually came from a former manager at the Met Council. We've discussed it at the commissioner level. And with the Met Council chair, Peter Bell, who happens to be a member of my board, we're not aware of any opposition to this proposal, and we think it's a good idea. And thank you.
All right, questions from members? All right, I see Judd from the Met Council would like to testify regarding this issue. Please come to the table, state your name for the record.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. And I just wanted to let the committee know that the council currently does provide this discount and to the tune of about $1.2 million per year. I know this is permissive language. I'm not quite sure that it's necessary since we already do provide that. I don't think that we would seek to provide a deeper discount because we'd like to make sure that those folks that we provide discounts for are all treated equally, but it's permissive language, and I don't believe that this council will go any further than we already do. But we've talked to Mr. Lair and the folks who brought this bill forward, and I mean, I think it's fine if they want to provide or put it in statute, but we already do this. So if they're looking for an additional discount, I don't think we'll do it, as I'm sure most people in the room know that we are generally up here at the legislature every year asking for money for our transit system, and like we're doing again this year, and any further discount that we would have an impact on our bottom line, and we are happy to work with Mr. Lair and his groups to keep the same discount that we provide them already.
All right, Representative Hornstein, comments about that?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We also very much appreciate the Met Council's, interest and help with some of these United Way clients and others who, quite frankly, need this service. But I think by passing this bill, we leave open the door for future consideration. This is Mr. Shetland mentioned a current policy. Policies change, can change, council chairs change over time. Financial circumstances change, and so this does allow the flexibility by putting it in statute to give everyone the comfort that this very, very important program to people will still be available.
All right, we do officially have a quorum, so I will officially call this meeting to order. All right, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against this bill? Questions from members? All right. If not, I will move that House File 1492 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. I am going to have you get up from the table right now and let Representative Murphy go. Representative Murphy, you have House File 1819. Before this committee, this also is a local option sales tax, and it will be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes without recommendation. Representative Murphy, you were not in the room when I stated this to town. Go ahead. We have found some issues with some of the local option sales tax bills, and some of them are not specific as to projects to be funded with the sales tax revenues. Some of the projects lack regional significance, and some of the bills don't specify an ending date on an authority to hold a referendum and impose the tax. And so if any of those items fit your bill, I would encourage you to work on it before the tax committee. With that, go ahead, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I accept your advice and agree with your advice and would appreciate having this sent to the tax committee.
All right. Go ahead, Representative Murphy. Is that it?
Do you need more, Madam Chair?
I don't. Anyone in the anyone on the committee need more information? All right. Anyone in the audience wish to testify for or against this bill? All right. I will renew my motion that House File 1819 be re-referred to the Tax Committee without recommendation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Murphy. You're done.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
All right. I will move that House File 1820, which was already presented by Representative Leader, be sent to the Committee on Taxes without recommendation. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, motion prevails. I also would move that 1894 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes without recommendation, and we do need to adopt the A1 amendment. I would move the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none, motion prevails. I would renew my motion that 1894 be sent to the Committee on Taxes without recommendation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. And the last one that we've already heard is House File 2059, Representative Dills, and I would refer that to the Committee on Taxes without recommendation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. That's it. Is Representative Emmer in the room yet? Okay, he's not. So Representative Hornstein, come back for the next one. The next bill of Representative Hornstein's is House File 1597. I will move that it be placed, recommended to pass, and be moved to the general register. Representative Hornstein, go ahead.
Hi, Madam Chair, members. This is simply an effort to ensure that the very important transitway, the Southwest Corridor, is placed as a higher priority project when the Metropolitan Council does its plan in 2008. And, this is a bill potentially, Madam Chair, that, we could lay over until a future time. I've been assured that that this is going to get really good consideration, and it just might be one of those statutes that may not be necessary at this time.
All right, Representative Hornstein, that's good, because I was going to ask you, why should I want to have the Southwest Transitway be a top priority when I can't get my busway finished and I want to be part of the North Star? And Representative Hornstein,
I think there's I think those are valid concerns and considerations, and this was an original response to the tiering system that the Metropolitan Council does. There's Tier 1 and Tier 2 projects. Currently, the Southwest Transitway is a Tier 2 project. We feel like it would meet all the criteria for Tier 1, but we know there's other projects out there, and we don't want to just open this up, and it may be just better left for a year laid over. So I would move to do that, or I ask you to move that,
all right,
Madam Chair.
I will lay over House File 1597. All right, Representative Hornstein, 1611. 1611, I believe, has an amendment. Is that correct? I would move that House File 1611 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. And I would move the A1 amendment to get it in the order the author wishes. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none, motion prevails. Representative Hornstein, go ahead.
Madam Chair and members, a lot of attention in the last few months to corridors and transitways. A lot of our members are coming forward with new ones. We have existing ones. And I will pass this on to Mr. Shetman, who will explain why we're coming to the legislature with this just a technical bill, really, about the transitways and corridors.
Mr. Shetton, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and thank you, Representative Hornstein, for agreeing to carry the bill. This is a Met Council agency initiative. It's an initiative that has the support of the Governor's Office and MnDOT and the Met Council. And what current legislative language that deals with light rail transit requires MnDOT to construct light rail transit lines in the metropolitan area, and for the Met Council to operate those rail lines. The Council is requesting to change the statutory language to allow the Governor at his discretion to designate the Met Council as the lead agency for construction of light rail lines in the metropolitan area. The Council is recommending this change because it more clearly defines the lines of responsibility that leads to efficiencies, especially as we work with the Federal Transit agencies out in Washington to make sure that we're streamlined in how we are proceeding with these large-scale transit and transitway projects. So it's really just a clarification. It makes it easier for us to work with the federal government, and that is basically the bill. And the amendment that went on the bill, just to speak to it very quickly, this amendment is on behalf of the council. Absolutely concurs with it. What it does is that it deletes that before acquiring land for constructing controlled access highway or transit fixed guideways, that the transportation department or the local government unit that's interested in acquiring this land, we're taking out the transit fixed guideways out of that language, so that when cities or counties are in the process of acquiring land for these transitways that we're talking about, that they don't need to come to the council to get that clarification, because they may be purchasing this land ahead of time in order to save some money, and that can be done before the council has approved anything yet. But it's really not a problem for us. We understand where they're coming from, so we support that 100%.
All right. Questions from members? Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against this bill? Yep. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hornstein, I'm glad to see this bill, particularly after sitting in capital investment and hearing the whole long list of requests that we've got before us in terms of funding all these different lines and systems. And can either you, Representative Hornstein, or Mr. Shetman, tell us how this will end up working? Will we, as a capital investment committee, for example, have some sense as to what plan makes the most sense, kind of the order of development here? Is that what we're going to eventually get to?
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Lanning. I think that's an excellent question that gets at the crux for why this is needed. It really streamlines the process. And, you know, the Metropolitan Council is a planning agency, and I think that's why this is properly put under their jurisdiction. I don't know if Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Representative Skelby.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And for Mr. Shetland or the author, Representative Hornstein, then my question would be, and I'm on the Capital Investment Committee, and I was there last Thursday when we heard these 10 bills that Representative Lanning is referencing. But a lot of those bills had the effect of outside of the Metropolitan Council area. For instance, Rush Line may go to Duluth, you know, and so we're talking about lines that go different than just the Metropolitan Council's jurisdiction. So how would that work?
Mr. Shetland.
Madam Chair, members, and Representative Scaldi, very good point. What we do is that the Council, as the MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, they get those federal dollars. But what we do as the federal grant recipient for these, we then have a corridor management committee, like with Central Corridor. We've got the mayors of both Minneapolis-St. Paul, Hennepin-Ramsey County, and all the interested parties involved to make these decisions, but the council will be the grant recipient, so that's why we're seeking the streamlining here. When you talk about North Star, if you talk about Rush Line, Red Rock, those groups will all be brought together through a corridor management committee, so we'll be working together with them. And what we would do is probably come to the legislature at that point and allow get some legislation that allows us to basically operate and work together outside the seven county metropolitan area, which is exactly what we will be coming back to the legislature for as soon as the North Star Corridor, commuter rail corridor, gets the full funding grant agreement. Then we'll be back here. Since we'll be operating it, we have to come back and get approval from the legislature to just allow us to operate the trains outside the metropolitan area. So it's a great point, and that's how we will handle that.
Representative Skelzy.
I guess my fear is that the Metropolitan Council, which is now seven cities, may go to 11 and maybe, I mean, seven counties, maybe to 11. You're not thinking of expanding to 87 as a planning group, are you?
Mr. Shetland.
Madam Chair, Representative Skelzy, absolutely not. I mean, these we will not be able to do anything outside of the metropolitan area without a resolution passed by these counties, without the legislature basically firmly defining what our responsibilities are. And I can guarantee you, as far as I can tell, that that these will be totally airtight, where the council won't be seeking any additional jurisdiction outside the Seven County metropolitan area. And I feel very confident in telling you that.
All right. Further questions from members? All right. Being none, I will recommend, or I will renew my motion that House File 1611 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Hornstein.
Okay.
Next is House File 1279, Representative Hornstein.
Okay. This is our police bill.
This bill needs to go to the Committee on Public Safety. So, Public Safety and Civil Justice. So I move that House File 1279 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety and Civil Justice. Go ahead, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. House File 1279 deals with the Metro Transit Police, and many people may not recognize that as an agency there's a separate and independent police force. We've had some high-profile press lately about the fact that there's very real issues and security concerns that this police force has to address. And so the purpose of this bill is to more clearly define the transit police jurisdiction. And again, there's relationships, mutual aid types of agreements that exist between the Metro Transit Police and other jurisdictions, as you have with any law enforcement entity. But I'll have Mr. Shetland explain the specifics of the bill. And again, this is an agency initiative from the Metropolitan Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Again, my name is Judge Shetland with the Metropolitan Council. I appreciate the committee hearing the bill today and Representative Hornstein carrying it for us. I think Representative Hornstein did a nice job of summarizing what the bill does. What we're doing is just clarifying some jurisdiction for the Metropolitan Transit Police. We're also in this bill giving us the jurisdiction, as Representative Scalzi and I were just mentioning a moment ago, it allows our Metro Transit Police to enforce basically unruly activity on the North Star Commuter Rail Line as soon as that line becomes up and operating. We also, the bill does one other thing where it adds the council to the list of police or law enforcement jurisdictions that are allowed to keep money or property that is seized during our arrest. There is a whole litany of agencies and law enforcement agencies that are included in this list. We're just being asked to be added to that list. Also, I'd like to point out to the members that we have our police chief, Dave Andreas, from Metro Transit, who's here in support of this bill, and I think it's relatively simple. I would also like to add that we did check with the Sheriff's Association, the Chief of Police Association, both Chief Dolan in Minneapolis and Chief Harrington in St. Paul, and all of them are supportive of this bill.
Questions from members? Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against this bill? Please come to the table, state your name for the record, and go ahead.
Hi,
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bill Gillespie, and I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association. We were just made aware of the bill, really. And it does one thing more that kind of has our concern and our interest, and we would like an explanation, if it's possible. The Metro Transit, I'm looking at line 119, beginning there, it's personnel reserves. Metropolitan Transit Police may exercise general law enforcement authority to assist any law enforcement agency in implementing or carrying out law enforcement activities, programs, or initiatives. Historically, we have always opposed that, and we would like an explanation, if possible, as to what that might mean.
Representative Hornstein.
I'll ask. I think this might be an opportunity maybe for the chief or this year.
All right. Please come to the table, state your name for the record. Representative House.
A question as he's walking down.
Certainly. Go ahead, Representative House.
Representative Hornstein, are they licensed peace officers?
Representative Hornstein said yes, not in the microphone. But please go ahead, Chief, state your name for the record.
It's David Indrius.
Go ahead.
I didn't hear the question. I'm sorry, it was up in the corner, and it's not quite as loud up there.
Certainly. If you could please state the question again, Mr. Gillespie.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, once again, Bill Gillespie, Executive Director of the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association, directing your attention to line 119. Excuse me. The Metropolitan Transit Police may exercise general law enforcement agency authority to assist any law enforcement agency in implementing or carrying out law enforcement activities, programs, or initiatives, and I indicated that historically we have opposed that position. If I could perhaps get a clarification.
Chief, go ahead.
Madam Chair, committee members, this language was put in as a result of the issues that we faced every time we were asked for assistance from our law enforcement partners. When the Minneapolis Police Department asked us to join them in enforcing laws in the safe zone in downtown Minneapolis, along with the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office and the Minneapolis Park Police, we were unable to do so at the advice of our general counsel without drawing up a memo of understanding because of the narrow language in the previous statute as it was written. This is merely allowing us to be able to go in at their request and assist them. And the rest of the statute also points out the fact that the city that we're in, the law enforcement agency, has primary and retains primary jurisdiction at all times.
Mr. Gillespie.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, with that explanation, we would oppose this part of the bill. It's overly broad. It was the concern that we had when this law was changed 2 years ago to allow Metro Transit additional lines of authority, and it doesn't speak specifically to any bus lanes or anything. It just says to assist any law enforcement agency in implementing or carrying out law enforcement activities, programs, or initiatives. And on that basis, we would oppose that.
All right. What I'm going to do is I am going to lay this bill over, and I want you all to go out in the hall and talk about this and work it out. So I'm going to lay this bill over, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Hornstein, you are the next item on the agenda. It is an informational hearing only. So if you want to be out in the hall with them, I can quickly move on to Representative Kahn, who is in the room as well.
This is sort of a police-to-police conversation.
Got it. Thanks. Representative Hornstein, go ahead.
All right,
so. Members, the reason why this bill is here is because it is in another committee. We thought that this is the area that we need to hear about.
Yes,
so he's going to present it, and then that way we don't have to have it referred here unless members object to me doing that, and then I would, of course, have it sent here. So, Representative Hornstein, go ahead.
I'll just ask, again, just in the interest of time and efficiency, to have Mr. Shettman.
All right, Mr. Shettman, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Judd Shettman. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. Thank you for hearing the bill today, and thank you, Representative Hornstein. The Metropolitan Council Transportation Advisory or Policy Bill, what we're doing in this bill, we're striking the language that deals with the Transportation Advisory Board. The TAB came to us and asked us to make a fix. It turns out that what they wanted wasn't exactly what they were seeking here in this language, so we've talked to them. We're going to be taking that language out in Representative Hornstein's transit subcommittee here in about an hour. And also we have some an amendment to the Council on Disabilities language. We've worked with Joan Wilshire and the folks from the Minnesota State Council on Disabilities. What this bill really does is changes how the council performs an audit. What we're doing is asking that we get legislative approval to basically allow the council staff to do an audit rather than a transit audit, rather than having the trying to seek a consultant to do it. We think that we can save some money doing it our way. We can also get this set in time so when we do our audit, we have that information available when we do our update of the transportation policy plan, which Representative Hornstein spoke to a few minutes ago, which includes the Southwest Corridor, which includes the Botno Boulevard, which includes the different Rushland corridors. So what we're doing is just trying to streamline some activity here, and that's basically the bill. There is, however, one amendment that we're going to be adding to the bill in Representative Hornstein's committee, and I appreciate the fact of being able to be here before your committee, because it does deal with something related to this particular committee's jurisdiction. What we're doing, and I spoke briefly with the chair of the committee and also Mr. Dyson and Ms. Lefevre, is that we have found that there is an obsolete reporting statute that is in the council's current statutes that we're asking to repeal the requirement to publish a consolidated metropolitan agencies bulletin. This legislation was passed in 1987. Back at that point, that there were six regional agencies, which included the Parks and Open Space Commission, the Regional Transit Board, which has now since been abolished, the Waste Control Commission, which has now been abolished, and the Metropolitan Airports Commission, which does their own reporting at this point, as well as the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission, which does their own reporting at this point. So since the council has now absorbed the Waste Control Commission, the Regional Transportation Board, and the Parks and Open Space Commission, we're just asking to repeal the statute because we already provide all of that reporting through our webpage and through the and just basically through our annual reporting. And I know I did speak with Ms. Lefevre and Ms. Dyson, and if they have any questions, I think that they may be able to say that this is obsolete as well.
All right. Are there questions from members? Representative Biskin.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I think this may have to come to you unless we come formally to this committee, unless there's a good explanation for this. Mr. Shetland, I see on page 2, starting on line 14, now, a current law asks for a performance audit of the transit system, and you are now changing that to a performance evaluation. Okay, semantics in my mind, I suppose. But the question is, the transportation system, right, is run by the Metropolitan Council, and then you're asking the Metropolitan Council to provide an evaluation. I guess I don't quite understand. Wouldn't there be a conflict there? It's me as a school administrator saying, you know, I need to be evaluated every year, and I'm going to do my evaluation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Biskins. Representative Biskins, you bring up a good point. When we do our audit right now, the council basically goes and hires a consultant to do this work, and then they report back to us. What we would like to do is have the council do this audit or evaluation, and then what we have done or what we will do is have a peer review done of this particular evaluation. So we're streamlining, we're saving, I think it's up to $150,000 that we won't have to pay to have a consultant do the work, but we will still have that peer review done without having to pay that additional money. And all of this work will be done. One of the other things that we're doing here is making sure this work can be done in time for us to have that information available when we put together our update of the transportation policy plan.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Mr. Shetman, can you point to the language in statute which would require the peer review? And then after you do that, would you tell us who are peers of the Metropolitan Council?
Mr. Shetland.
Madam Chair, I think Representative Hornstein.
Representative Hornstein.
Madam Chair, Representative Dixon, I think you raise a very, very good point. And I will would like to either we could delete this. We could delete this section here, or we could have further conversations before it gets to my committee. But I think, you know, you raise a good point. I think you're right, and we're going to have to figure out a better way to do this evaluation.
Representative Biskins and Representative Hornstein, if you take care of this issue, is there any other issue that members are concerned about? If you take care of this issue, it won't likely have to come to our committee, but in the event you don't, it will. So I will
say on the record, Madam Chair, we will take care of it.
All right, well, thank you very much. Representative Hornstein, I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. I actually have Representative House who has stated that he has people from far away that he wants to be able to have testify. So if you could come to the table and let them do their thing, we'll do that. And then Representative Carlson and Conn are both here as well, so we want to keep moving along.
They have
the deal. We have a peace agreement here between the peace officers.
All right.
Okay. Madam Chair, maybe in the interest of time, maybe they could testify briefly, but we could also just do this in public safety. Whatever your preference is.
Is that fine? Okay. All right. We will go ahead. Do you have the language? Have you talked to staff so we know what it has to say?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Bill Gillespie, the executive director of the MPPOA. My objections have been stated for the record here. We would certainly not oppose the passage of the bill out to the next committee, and we can work on it between now and the time we get to public safety, if that would be okay with the chair.
Okay. That's fine with me if it's fine with everyone else. All right. Hearing none, I will take house file number. I will take 1279 from the table and recommend that it be passed and sent to the Committee on Public Safety and Civil Justice. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you.
Manager.
All right, Representative House, go ahead. I will, Representative Lanning will move that House File 269 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. Representative House, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I do have an amendment. It's DE2.
I'm sorry?
I have an amendment. It's DE2.
All right. Representative Lanning moves the DE2 amendment. Representative House. All those in favor of putting the bill in the shape that the author would like? No?
Madam Chair, I'm going to incorporate an amendment into my amendment. So.
Got it.
And I can do that, Madam Chair. I'm part of the committee.
Oh, that's right. Sorry, Representative House.
I thought I was being punished and sent to the corner.
Madam Chair.
Moving right along.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lanning.
I think Representative House should be the lead author here.
Absolutely. Representative House, go ahead.
Madam Chair and members, I would move House File 269 be recommended to pass sent to the general register.
All right.
I have an amendment. It's marked DE2. And I am going to incorporate an amendment to this, and staff can help me do it correctly. But if you go to page 2, remove everything after line 9 in the rest of the bill.
All right.
Line 9 and everything.
All right. Questions from members?
And I would incorporate that into the amendment.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative House, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The bill is twofold. First, in doing special elections, current law says between 30 to 60 days. We'd like to make that 90. We have not encompassed any opposition to that. It gives counties a little bit more time to work this in and get it done without rushing and without extreme rushing. The second portion of the bill deals with filling a vacancy in county commissioner. And very simply, this states that if a county commissioner cannot perform their function, and our main concern is if they were to perish, and if they do it just before filing, that the county board may, not, they don't have to, but they may appoint someone to fill that position until the next general election. So if it was for more, if it was for less than a year and a half, they would actually serve that appointment until the next election. If it was more than 2 years, obviously the appointment would be only for about a year and a half. And I will tell you, Madam Chair and members, that we got some information from staff. Ms. Dyson could explain it if you need it, but we've discovered that under current law, if you look at my bill as amended on line 5, where it starts out at the end of the line, except as provided in subdivision 3. Well, if you go to subdivision 3, that says inability or refusal to serve in addition to events specified in section 351.02, subdivision 3 says the board may appoint someone to fill the commissioner's vacancy till the end of the current term. And the reasons being in 351.02 are the death of the incumbent, resignation, incumbent's removal, ceasing to be a resident of the state, and on and on and on. It was suggested to me by someone from Ramsey County that it really didn't mean that. It only meant that they could appoint someone for a 90-day period while they were ill, but it does not say that in current law. It says they can appoint for the remainder of the term. Some suggested that I withdraw my bill because we can already appoint. I don't think so. I think we should do my bill because at least they can appoint someone for a full four-year term. With my bill, they have the option of doing that or doing a special election, and I think it's much better. And I do have Sharon Anderson, our county auditor, and I would like her to just explain why we really need to do this bill, at least why Cass County has been so passionate with this and have worked on it for 7 years.
All right. Please go ahead. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Sharon Anderson. I'm Cass County Auditor Treasurer. This does represent, I think, what we see as a refinement and not a drastic change to the current law regarding how we fill vacancies on the county board. I think it does expand the options for counties to examine the local circumstances, particularly in our case where we did have a death in office. The goals and the outcomes that I see of this proposed change to the process are that we still, again, maintain some flexibility based on what those circumstances creating the vacancy happen to be. It gives the county board the best opportunity to make a good decision when they weigh all those circumstances in how to proceed. The addition of subdivision 1A does add some clarity, I think, to the existing law. Certainly we've had some differences at the local level in how this law has been interpreted. So there again, that's always a good goal if we can add some clarity to the law. It also provides some guidance, as Representative Howe stated, two county boards based on what is left remaining in that term of office and how long that is. So it makes the model just a little bit more uniform with the statutory process that already exists in law for cities and townships and school districts. Gives the counties the ability to manage their election costs by having the option to appoint only until that next regular election is held. And again, as Representative Howe's already stated, in the event of a special election, it extends that time frame by 30 days in which to get the process done. That certainly allows for a little bit more sensitivity when it has been a death in office. It will also allow us to do a better job administering our mail ballot and absentee balloting for those elections. So in summary, I think Cass County sees that we need some improvement in this law, and we think this is the way to get there. So thank you.
Representative Howe.
Madam Chair, Page just gave me a note that I have to be in room 200 ASAP. I have a bill at Huntley's committee, and I know he's an impatient man.
Okay.
So if the questions are reasonably simple, I think Representative Lanning or my auditor could do that. Would I be able to be excused? Would that be okay?
I've
never had this happen to me before.
That's okay, certainly. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Representative Biskins was first.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. Before he leaves, could I have a clarification on the amendment?
Certainly.
What was deleted again? I was unclear.
Representative Lanning, on the delete all amendment, everything after line 8 on page 2 is gone.
Okay.
So the effective date would be the last sentence in the bill as amended.
All right. All right, Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, and I ask for the wisdom of Ms. Dyson or Ms. Lefevre on this question. As staff reads current law, is it your interpretation that under almost any condition, a vacancy in office could be filled by an appointment for up to 3 years and 64 days?
Ms. Dyson?
Madam Chair and Representative Biskins, that was how I was reading the, and to be honest, this is something that I just, you know, kind of looked at yesterday, and I would welcome advice from people who actually practice in this area with, in the counties. But as Representative Howes said, that if you look at the delete everything amendment, it has that cross reference. It starts out, it says, except as provided in subdivision 3. Subdivision 3, which is not in the delete everything amendment, starts out by saying, in addition to the events specified in section 351.02. Right. Vacancy may be declared, et cetera. 351.02 lists how offices become vacant, and that includes death of or in resignation, removal, and it has a list of ways they become vacant. But that seems to me to say that for any of those reasons, it says, if any of the preceding conditions occur, the county board may, after you've had a resolution declaring, make an appointment to fill the vacancy at a meeting for the unexpired term, or until they're able to resume duties of office. So I was, that's how I interpreted it, but as Representative House said, that I understand that other counties don't view it that way, and I would be happy to, you know, accept advice from counties on this, but that was what I
Representative Biskin.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you, and Ms. Dyson, I read exactly the same thing. In fact, as when I look at 351.02, it basically covers everything except for ascension into heaven on a cloud, for goodness sakes, all right, would be covered under a vacancy. And then I go back and say, well, if under any of those circumstances, they can appoint and don't have to hold an election. So as I read Representative Howe's bill, you know, it almost seems like it's making elections more regular, not less, all right, than under current law. But Madam Chair, I do have a question, seeing as this is a complex election issue. Shouldn't this bill probably be re-referred to the committee who has jurisdiction over elections rather than a referral slate to the House floor?
We were told that GovOps doesn't want it.
Well, we'll have to ask that one on the floor. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Oh, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
For the record.
Joe Matthews with the Association of Minnesota Counties. Madam Chair, to represent Biskin's question, our position on this issue is that we strongly do favor special elections. Where the appointment issue really comes to a head, last September, Steele County Commissioner Jerry Peterson died on September 1st, and under current law, the county had to have a special election even before the upcoming general election in order to have somebody finish out the end of that term. And so from our perspective, where this appointment issue really comes to a head is, had Mr. Peterson passed away a week later, that vacancy could have existed for 60 days, and then whoever won the general election could have hypothetically been appointed to finish out the existing term and then serve the term they were just elected to. So that's kind of the intention of where this goes. To your concern, we certainly wouldn't have an issue with cleaning this language up to make sure that it reflected that it's not to appoint folks for 2 and 3 year terms. This is something, really what the root of this issue is to make sure that when someone passes away, we don't have to have a special election before the family can even have a funeral, which is really hard for them. And it happens, unfortunately, all too often.
Representative Biskins, my thought is that we will, when we're finished, we're going to lay this over and go check with the Elections Committee to make certain that they really don't want to see it, so that we can address it, because, you know, we don't debate election law here. So,
yeah.
Representative Biskins.
Well, and thank you, Madam Chair, and I do appreciate that, because there seems to be a misinterpretation of the reading of the law. If you read the law very specifically and very literally, as I think laws are meant to be read, it clearly gives the ability to appoint following the death of an incumbent, right? And so I don't know why, where you read an interpretation that you had to have an election upon the death of an incumbent. When I look back at 351.02, right, the first bullet is the death of an incumbent, and that is one of the approved vacancies for appointment.
All right. Briefly, and then I'm going to lay it over because we do have a number of issues that we need to get to. So go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Biskins, when the Jerry Peterson death happened last fall, we worked very closely with the state auditor, and it was them who advised Steele County as to the procedures. And this has happened multiple times. Cass County was an example. Steele County was a recent one. I know there have been others. And so I unfortunately don't have the statute in front of me. I know we could probably provide that for you if it ease your concerns. I'm not sure of the exact site offhand. But, so this is actually something that came about because working with the Secretary of State's office, who I think has a pretty good grasp of the law in this area, is the case. So I'd have to defer someone else to answer that specifically.
And we'll get those answers. Representative Conan.
Thank you, Chair Hillstrom. And my question is for either one of the testifiers or possibly Representative Lanning. I'll lay out a scenario first and then ask the question. I'll use, for an example, a county that has five commissioner districts. If in that county, districts 1, 2, and 3 had similar interests, districts 4 and 5 had similar interests that weren't the same as 1, 2, and 3, there's a vacancy in district 5. Could the commissioners in 1, 2, and 3, who would then have a majority, appoint somebody in District 5 who represents their interests more than the districts of the people of District 5?
Madam Chair, Representative Kunin, that's a great question. I guess I can't answer specifically. I mean, offhand, if the three folks are opposed to the two and one of the minority passes on, you already have a majority on the board. I mean, you'd have, I guess, a four-fifths majority, but I'm not sure how significant that would be in most cases. So I don't think that's the case, to be honest, speaking with our commissioners. This issue is highly emotional, not political. And so their strong preference is to have elections. The appointment piece really only comes into play when there's a very clear, as I laid out earlier in the scenario, where someone passes away and there's someone new who's going to be elected in the general election that can then finish out that term. This isn't a case where county boards are looking to make county commissioners appointed officials on a regular basis. This is for short terms and for special scenarios. And really, the death issue is the specific kind of cause for this legislation. That's the real issue driving us.
All right.
Thank you.
Final question, Representative Marquardt. We're going
to
move on.
Thank you very much. And I want to address what is not before us. And I talked to Representative Howells ahead of time and thanked him for removing the portion of the bill that would have gone down that path of being able to appoint auditors and treasurers and recorders and so forth. And I've kind of been a minority in this body on some of those bills as we've brought them up county by county. And I have one quick question of staff here. Has there ever been an election held, where they've actually held an election like on a November, that has been successful in turning a position that was once elective into an appointed position that we know of?
Dyson?
I know of several that have gone down to defeat, but do we have a lot that, I mean, how? What is the record for that?
Ms. Dyson, do you know
if
that?
We know.
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, I'm almost positive there have been some elections, but I'm scanning a table that I have on all the counties that have changed.
while she looks for that. I think we're going to kind of keep going here. So, Ms. Dyson, if you could get that information for us and provide that to the members.
Madam Chair, I guess the point is I don't think they've probably been all that successful, and it does raise a red flag when they come asking for special legislation to appoint rather than allowing the voters to decide.
Madam Chair?
Ms. Dyson.
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, is your question about referendums under the general law or when they are the reverse referendum?
The general
law. Apparently, Freeborn County had a referendum in 82 that provided for elected auditor-treasurer that combined that one. There was, let's see, number 7, Mille Lacs. Again, that was to do a combination of auditor-treasurer, but as an elected position. That was in 1980.
Madam Chair, that's fine.
Let me put it, Madam Chair, to put it, there. I have this report as a table. For any of the ones that were done under general law, they were done with an election. And this lists whether it was done under general law or special law. And so, yes, there are a number of counties that have had elections on this.
All right. With that, I'm going to lay over House File 269, and we'll all talk about whether the next election committee needs to see it. All right, Representative Kahn is next with House File 446, and it's my understanding that there is peace in the valley on this one. So Representative Kahn will be brief. I would recommend that House File 446 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Representative Kahn, go ahead.
Madam Chairman, the part referring to local government, all of the mandates to local governments have been renewed. The League of Minnesota Cities and the League of Small Cities have no objection to it. The only requirement is on state funding, and even that is doesn't apply. Besides all the exceptions that are listed, it doesn't apply to the operation and maintenance of lights and lighting systems purchased or installed, of which the design work is completed before this summer. And before we get to finance, I'm also working with the Department of Transportation on additional exceptions dealing with the construction costs, the energy savings related to construction costs. Part relating to, so there's no requirement on municipal government. Several municipalities have already done this. I've given you a model, the ordinance from Maplewood. I've given you three ordinances from other places. The major point of the bill will be the starts on 229, and that's the working out of a model ordinance in consultation with all affected people. So it's essentially what the purpose of the bill is to raise the problem, raise the issue. Mm-hmm. Point out the energy conserving effects which have been occurred worldwide with people who have done this, plus the increased safety effects in terms of reducing glare, and have people work on a model ordinance over the next year.
Representative Kahn, you do want us to do the amendment.
Oh, yes. I'd like you to do the amendment.
It's the DE1. I would move the DE1 amendment to put the bill on the order the author would like. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Kahn.
Yes. And I guess there are people from the Department of Transportation who will say that we're working on that issue. Want to hear from them? Although that's not really the local government issue.
Nope. Okay. Questions from members. Representative Diskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, representing Scott County, and I've got my seatmate right next to me. He can attest to the biggest complaint I hear when it comes to night pollution is out at Mystic Lake. They've got about 10 spotlights that shine straight up into the sky, and it goes all night, all right? Does this bill at all ask them, as tribal governments, to participate in this night pollution model ordinance development?
I guess that's a very good for the people who are doing the model ordinance. That's a very good question to ask them and to put them in, and it would be a very good, you know, I think one of the things is as people start to do this, it then becomes, it becomes something that people are very interested in cooperating in it. Mm. There's something which may be happening now. The other people have been working on this is the Audubon Society, who's very concerned in terms of what it does to wildlife. And it's so, in last fall, and there are many cities that are now turning out their lights on buildings from March 15th till the end of October, late at night, for bird migration. And I remembered seeing an article in the New York Times where they were asking, and I thought, that's New York. They're not going to turn off the lights on the Chrysler Building and the Empire State Building for birds. And they actually did it. He couldn't believe it. So, you know, I think there is the sense of getting people to understand that it's not only a problem, but it also is an enormous energy-saving device. I've given you more information than I think you want on this,
yes.
Particularly a very good sheet from okay.
All right. I think there's someone here from the Department of Transportation, but again, we're not going to take up the transportation piece, so if you have something quickly to say that the local government committee would care about, we have a few questions of members, and then I'm going to ask if anyone in the public is here to testify, because we do have a number of bills yet, and we're going to finish. So please go ahead, state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is Ray Sire. I'm with MnDOT. I'm the Assistant State Traffic Engineer for Intelligent Transportation Systems, and our group develops specifications and standards for MnDOT lighting systems. And I'd like to acknowledge and appreciate the goals of this bill, and we have been working with Representative Kahn, and we particularly appreciate some of the amendments that have been incorporated, including switching to a cutoff lighting fixture instead of full cutoff lighting fixture that has a big difference in the cost impact on MnDOT, and also appreciate the amendment exempting existing systems. We do have some concerns about this bill. It will likely increase the number of poles and light fixtures that we have to use in many circumstances. We have some wider roads that we can light with fixtures that do not meet the requirements of this, that under this requirement we would have to put poles on both sides of the road to be able to light the full width and increase the number of poles. And those results in higher costs to build the system and more electricity use and some safety issues with more poles. We have contacted some of the government bodies that were listed on the Dark Sky website as having some of these similar legislation. We talked to the state of Colorado and New Mexico. They both told us that they did have to install more poles in order to meet the nationally accepted light levels under this kind of a legislation. Arkansas has installed some full cutoff fixtures, but they haven't figured out how to do it yet on freeways, which affects us more. The city of Calgary is one of the handouts you have here. They have been able to do this in residential areas. They told us that their light levels prior to changing it had been excessive, and they were able to reduce it because they were excessive to start with, but they did not change major intersections or areas around parks because of concerns about the light levels. And they also told us that the city of Edmonton had looked into it but was not able to do it because they couldn't meet the recommended light levels. So I guess checking some of the other ones, it looks like they've had some of the similar concerns as MnDOT. But we'd like to acknowledge the goal of the bill, and we do look forward to working with Representative Kahn on this.
All right. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify for or against this bill? All right. Seeing none, I do have Representative Beard and Representative Holberg. Representative Beard, go ahead.
My question was asked and answered, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just the lights above Mystic Lake, we taught our kids that that was the money funnel. And if you went near it, it sucked all the money out of your pocket or wallet, so not to go anywhere near that place. But anyway.
That's, Madam Chairman, that's almost as good as mine, that saying that all gambling is a regressive tax on stupidity.
But Representative Kahn, can you tell me, and I appreciate you talking to me about this bill ahead of time, but how does this relate to the lighted billboards, the illuminated
Representative
Kahn.
Yes. Again, it depends on how the lights, you know, one of the things is the lights might face down instead of up. And again, we have again, if you look at the model, I gave you a chart of the ordinances, and a lot of things are exempted in that. So again, it's a question of what kind, if we're looking at what local units of government would do, it's the kind of ordinance that they would adopt.
And Madam Chair, the lighted billboards I'm speaking of are the ones that are like that lit. Now the technology is allowing the images to change every so often. Representative Beard tells me they're LEDs. Is it your intent to limit the use of those under this?
I don't think that this bill does that. The bill just really deals with the direction.
Representative Kahn, if you would work with Representative Holberg to address her issues, I would appreciate that very much. Representative Dominguez, briefly, because we're going to move on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question on Subdivision 2, number one standard. It says standard for living on private property. Now, are you talking about the fixtures that are on fixtures on the homes? Could you give me some example? And does this do anything about neon lighting?
Representative Kahn.
It doesn't do anything with the kind of lighting that you have. Is Sean Finwell here by chance? I'm sorry, I thought she was here at the last committee. She's the committee the city planner from Maplewood. And one of the things that she talked about, and of course they're dealing with developers on private property, and she said there, and I gave you the Maplewood ordinance, which is an example, and she said they had one developer complained, and she went to work with him, and he was just fine, and they discussed how to do it.
All right. I will renew my motion that House File 446 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Kahn. Representative Carlson, I will move that House File 1973 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Representative Carlson, go ahead. My understanding, you have two amendments. Would you like us to take those up first?
That would be fine, Madam Chair. I've had a chance to look at those and concur with them.
All right. I would move Amendment 0324 to get the bill in the order the author would like. All those in favor signify. Oops, do you have them?
Nope.
They don't have them yet. All right. We have two amendments, so I'll let them get passed out. While they're getting passed out, why don't you talk to the bill and the amendments, and then we'll
get that'll be fine, Madam Chair. Thank you. And then we can take the amendments up. Members, House File 1973 is the policy language that facilitates the merger of the Minneapolis Public Library and the Hennepin County Library System. The library's appropriations language is traveling separately. It is important to note that this is permissive legislation. It does not require the merger. If combined, the two systems would represent one of the largest and strongest library systems in the country, and those of you that are familiar with them know that they both have a long and successful history. Representatives of the city and county have been working tirelessly to determine the best alternative to enable the Minneapolis and Hennepin County libraries to serve their patrons well and remain on a strong financial footing. These representatives determined that a merged system could be better positioned to address changes needed to subsequently strengthen education, learning, literacy, work development, and other community-wide issues throughout Minneapolis and Hennepin County. Consolidating Minneapolis and Hennepin County's library system will allow our libraries to provide better service to all residents of Hennepin County and remain financially sound. The merger has been endorsed by the Minneapolis City Council, the Minneapolis Library Board, the Hennepin County Library Board, and the Hennepin County Board will be taking up the issue again at its meeting next week. Due to the quick pace of the merger, labor issues, I do want to point out are still being worked out. I know that at least one of the members of the committee had a question about that, so that's still under negotiation. And I have with me then today Hennepin County Commissioner Peter McLaughlin, who will testify, and also available for questions would be the Minneapolis Library Director Kit Hadley, and also Amy Ryan, the Hennepin County Director of Libraries. So, Madam Chair, if you're ready, I'll turn it over to Commissioner McLaughlin.
Go ahead. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Peter McLaughlin. I'm a Hennepin County Commissioner. Always great to be back in the House Committee as a former member. This is an issue that we've been working on for quite some time. We believe that we have two great library systems, and by combining the systems will create an even greater library system for the 21st century. We are trying to combine these systems. We think there'll be efficiencies that will be achieved by combining the two library systems. We'll be able to move forward in the 21st century with a library system that can be responsive to all the citizens, all the residents, all the businesses in Hennepin County that make use of the library system. We have been careful in our negotiations on the fiscal side to make sure that we are not shifting responsibilities. For example, on the capital side, we are going to be saying that the capital commitments that the two library systems made in the past will remain the responsibilities of the jurisdictions that made the taxing decisions and the capital decisions. We are making sure that as the libraries are turned over, if in 2008 that the libraries in Minneapolis would be in sound fiscal condition. There's actually an infusion of $1 million by the city of Minneapolis to make sure that their system is in sound shape and there's no fiscal structural deficit within that library system. Beyond that, in the event that the city of Minneapolis decides to reopen libraries, some of the ones that are closed, the city of Minneapolis is going to be responsible for those additional hours at the outset, and only over time will Hennepin County taxpayers take over those responsibilities. We think we've been careful in how we've structured this merger. On the Hennepin County Board position, we've had the endorsement of the City of Minneapolis, the Minneapolis Library Board, and our Hennepin County Library Board, which is an advisory board. The Hennepin County Board has been looked yesterday at some of the labor issues and the combining of the two systems, and we're asking for another week to deal with those. We're going to be taking those up next Tuesday. But the board has been supportive of the merger, supportive of the structure of the merger, and we just need this extra week, Madam Chair and members, to deal with those issues. So we'd be happy to stand for questions.
All right. Representative Lincheski, you have questions.
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please pull your microphone.
Can you hear me? The part of the bill, Section 9, now how is the climate sharing getting funded in here?
Madam Chair.
Mr. McGlack.
Madam Chair, Representative Lincheski. The planetarium, the state provided a bonding allocation to the planetarium of $22 million. Then there is a private fundraising effort that is designed to make up the balance of the cost of the planetarium. The way the planetarium is going to be handled, there's an amendment that you're going to see momentarily that would transfer the bonding proceeds from Minneapolis to Hennepin County as the owner of the facility. And then the decision will have to be made by the Hennepin County Board whether to proceed with the planetarium or not. And if we don't proceed, we wouldn't obviously use the bonding proceeds. So the decision will be in the hands of the Hennepin County Board, which would be, if the merger occurs, the owner of the planetarium. But that's going to depend on a business plan and private fundraising to make up the balance of the cost of the planetarium. So that's, we sort of agreed in our advisory committee that we would put that issue sort of over to the side, pending fundraising efforts and a clear business plan for the planetarium.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you. And honestly, I thought of this as a library merger bill and was shocked to see the planetarium in here. So I don't think legislators think the planetarium's in this bill. I think we need to work on that piece more.
Mr. McLaughlin.
The reason the planetarium was always a part of the Minneapolis Public Library, and if the Minneapolis Public Libraries are going to be merged into the Hennepin County system, the planetarium issue comes with it. Otherwise, it wouldn't have a home. That's why it's in here.
Okay. Madam Chair, if I may, can you hear me now? I'm using this other mic here. As it should not surprise you, the concern I have is relates to the ballpark tax levy and the language you've got in here to supplement the city the Minneapolis contribution to extend hours. And I think, Commissioner McLaughlin, you know I oppose this language getting into the stadium bill, I, of course, oppose the stadium bill as well, but I oppose this language as well. But it made it in. And I guess what I'm asking now in this provision, I don't understand how this is follows what was in the stadium bill. The stadium bill expressly stated that the money that could come due to the Hennepin County residents building a stadium for the state could go to things like youth sports and could go to extend the hours of the operation for Hennepin County libraries and Minneapolis libraries, but it was clear that it was not to supplant the funding. It was only to supplement, but the bill supplants it.
Mr. McLaughlin.
Madam Chair, that is not our intention nor our reading of this language. This is was meant clearly to supplement library hours, and we wanted to make sure, because earlier in the bill we said that if Minneapolis expands library hours for the closed libraries or exists other open libraries now, that they had to pay for those at the outset. And we just wanted to make clear that the ballpark money would be treated as it was intended in last year's ballpark bill, which is to supplement library hours in both the Hennepin system and the Minneapolis system. We didn't want to preclude expansion of hours in Minneapolis with the language that we're putting in saying that they had to pay for all expansion of hours. We're trying to keep it consistent, Madam Chair, and
Representative Lintesky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I won't waste too many time on that because I know we'll get into that in tax committee. But I do want to ask, and this is the local government part of the bill, and that is, in looking at the library statutes, the way, and you can maybe explain to me why this isn't the case, there is a discontinuance law that says if a public library wants to discontinue, it has to take it to the voters. Do you feel that Minneapolis is exempt from this provision for some reason?
Madam Chair, I cannot quote you chapter and verse, but there is in statute a provision that says that Minneapolis and Hennepin County may merge their library systems, but they need to come to the legislature to get that permission. I don't know what chapter that's in, but there actually is a provision in state law that says that right now.
So okay. Representative Lincheski, it is currently on page 10, line 10, or yes. Line 11, it starts, merger, in what's in current law.
And they're changing it.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Madam Chair.
Mr. McLaughlin.
The only thing that we're changing is we're saying that the county, this is all the same, the county and library board of the city of Minneapolis, the county and the library board of the city of Minneapolis may agree to merge their public library systems at a time and in a manner as they may agree. That's the old law, and it says the merger shall be subject to enabling legislation by the legislature, and the change that we're making is to strike that last sentence and say, as enabled pursuant to this act. But we kind of close the loop and kind of clean up the statute. But there's no change in the intent of the statute as it exists now, in my view.
Representative Lintesky, a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, maybe we can think about it further. I guess I had visited with Ms. Lefevre, and there's, you know, I'm referencing the chapter that is about establishing and discontinuing library services. So, but I won't waste committee time on that because I know there's a very aggressive schedule we're trying to get through, and I can appreciate that. But I do just have to ask, and it's for Representative Carlson or Commissioner McLaughlin, you know, I have to say that as a suburban Hennepin legislator, I mean, I know that Representative McLaughlin knows that there are many Hennepin legislators who, in fact, almost all oppose the whole stadium bill. But the concern that's similar here is when suburban Hennepin is asked to fund things for Minneapolis, it creates, you know, ill will at times, and we certainly think that libraries are very decent public services, but I think the question for me, and I think for many, is what do Hennepin suburban legislators get that they don't already have? And I have heard there's extensive archives, but beyond that, why would our tax base need to pick up this price?
Mr. McLaughlin.
Sure. First, on the tax base question, out of the chute, we think in the initial year, our best estimates are that there is about a $200,000 swing. There'd be an increase in taxes paid in the suburbs of $200,000 and a decrease in Minneapolis of $200,000. That's one less than 1/300th 5%, 1/300th of the total budget here. So I mean, it's kind of rounding error. If there were two tax appeals, that could shift to being a push. So there isn't a shift out of the chute. We've been very careful in how we negotiated this. Over time, the county, the suburban taxpayers will pick up more of the operating expense, but the city of Minneapolis is going to be picking up capital expenditures that are planned in suburban Hennepin County. So we think it's on a fiscal basis, it's balanced. For library patrons, it's going to be one system, it's going to be integrated. We're going to see cooperation on homework helper programs and things of that sort that have evolved in the library system, some of them more in Minneapolis than in Hennepin County, and the others vice versa. But we think this creates a robust library system that will draw upon the incredible collection, the historic collection of the Minneapolis library system, and the extensive collection that Hennepin County has. And we think the two systems are very complementary, and it creates a robust system that's going to have the financial backing to stay strong as we move forward. We think that a weakening of the Minneapolis system will weaken the Hennepin County system and vice versa. So we want to hold them together by going together and getting the efficiencies that come with that and the complementarity. We think it's going to be a stronger library system across the board.
All right. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Carlson, Deb Dyson suggests that the bonding portion of this you might want to offer as deal with as an amendment to the Capital Investment Committee bill instead of this bill, because it puts this bill in a different category. I don't know what your
The motion. I don't know if you were here relative to the motion, but if it passes successfully, it goes over to finance.
Okay.
And we can take care of. Okay. Excuse me, I've been fighting a cold. My voice is not the best. Comes and goes. But it will be in the finance committee, and we can work on those issues.
All right. Other questions? All right. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Is the director of Minneapolis Public Libraries here? They were on the list. Professional Library Union of Minneapolis.
Madam Chair, I announced in my presentation that they were available to answer questions, both the director of Hennepin County and Minneapolis. So if
perfect. We don't need
if there are no questions, they were available for that purpose. And then I think the third witness on your list, I was told, did not need to testify. I don't know if he's still in the audience or not, but
great.
And they're saying that they don't need to. They're up there.
Perfect. So then I would move your 0323 amendment to put the bill in the order the author would like. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. I would move the 0324 amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. Further questions? Seeing none, I would renew my motion that House File 1973 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank
All right,
you, Madam
thank you,
Chair.
Representative Carlson. All right. Do you want to share the meeting then? All right. I don't know. Where's my bill going?
You asked my question.
Well,
start right off with that, right?
I'm bringing all of you.
I've been studying this and studying this and studying this. We were meeting with the leader about our transportation bill. You know, both of my bills are fast tracking.
All right, Mr. Representative Shumper, Mr. Chair, before we get started here, Representative Emmer has been tied up and he has not made it to our committee. And Representative Olson is willing to move his bill, or Representative Lanning. Representative Marquardt is going to want these bills, and so I would encourage members to pass Representative Emmer's bill without recommendation onto the Tax Committee, and I will talk to Representative Emmer to make certain that he has heard the same speech that I gave to all the other members. So without objection, Representative Olson would move Representative Emmer's bill.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move that House File 1814 be moved to the tax, is it property tax?
Just the tax committee.
To the tax committee without recommendation.
Okay, any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Representative Hillstrom, you want to present your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you. All right. I would move that House File 1309 be recommended to pass, and where does it go?
Committee on Finance.
All right. Be recommended to pass and be re-referred to State Finance government. With the recommendation that it be re-referred to State Government Finance. All right. This bill was brought to me by the State Auditor, and I would like them to take over and address the issue.
My name is Mark Kerr. I'm Assistant Legal Counsel at the Office of the State Auditor. And we brought this bill last year, and it's back again this year. The purpose of the bill is to define political subdivision consistently within Chapter 6. To refer to local governments, Chapter 6 is the statutory chapter that deals with the powers and duties of the State Auditor. And second, to make sure the State Auditor's oversight role is described consistently regarding all units of local government, including special districts. For both 2003 and 2004, the OSA, the Office of the State Auditor, has issued a report on Minnesota special district finances. And we found in 2003, when 498 special districts reported to us, that they had over $600 million in government fund revenues. And if you included the enterprise funds that they were responsible for, their total revenue was almost $2 billion, $1.85 billion. In 2004, we did another report that has come out since the last legislative session. And the numbers there are 520 special districts reported $746 million in government revenues. And that's three times more than all the revenues of all the towns in Minnesota. There are 1,700 towns in Minnesota. And the total revenue for these 520 special districts was $2.25 billion. And so what we're trying to do is make sure our oversight is consistent over these, consistently applies to special districts as it applies to other local units of government. I'll go through the bill very quickly. I won't touch on every section, but I'll point out the main sections. In Section 1, we have a couple definitions. The first one is a definition of political subdivision. You'll see, if you look through Chapter 6, that we use various terms to describe local units of government, either local units of government or just local governments, or we have little lists of different local units of governments. And we're replacing all of that with the term political subdivision. And we worked with the LEG auditor to make sure we don't include anybody that the LEG auditor also audits, and that's a provision there in Subdivision 2. We've also defined special district here to make sure we catch all of these entities that are out there that don't fall into the political subdivision definition. We've also taken out some archaic language. You can see in Section 2, in addition to changing over to political subdivision, we've taken out a sentence that gave us a duty of designing a check form for local units of government. We don't do that. Nobody in our office remembers a time when we did that, so we're just taking that out. I'm going to skip now to the main section regarding special districts, which is Section 19. The problem that we saw when we did our special district report was that the accounting practices of the special districts varied greatly throughout the state. Some special districts, even if they had an audit requirement, were not preparing their audits, or the audits were being prepared very late so that they weren't any good for making decisions at that local level or for really for our review at the state level. So what this does, this is Section 19 again, it creates a new section that tells special districts that they need to file with us their documents that create them, like articles of incorporation, bylaws, things like that. And then it has an audit requirement that's exactly the same audit requirement that applies to cities and towns. If they have revenue over a certain amount, they need to get an audit every year. If their revenue is under that amount, they need to get an audit for 1 year out of every 5 years. And we've clarified it a little bit since last year by just making the amount a reference to a section in 412. That's a section that applies to cities with combined clerk-treasurer. The amount in that statute started as $150,000 back in 2004, and now it's been increased by operation of an inflationary provision to be about $166,900 in 2006. So if it has, if one of these special districts has revenue over that amount, they'd have to have an annual audit. Also, we've got a provision here to remedy the tardiness problem with audits that says they have to prepare their audits if they have one or get their financial statements together within 180 days after the end of the district's fiscal year. This was taken from the general rule for cities and towns. It's actually the longer rule that applies to bigger cities and towns. There's a shorter one for small towns and small cities that would have been 45 days. So this gives them a little more time, you know, gives them 180 days to get their stuff together and file it. Section 21 specifically deals with watershed districts, and we're really just fixing this provision. This was kind of an odd provision because it allowed us to, or it forced managers of a watershed district to submit any reports demanded by the state auditor, and yet it didn't allow us really any authority to anything but an annual audit if we get a petition or a resolution of the managers. So we filled it out to make it consistent with our general authority, and it allows us to conduct any such examinations as the public interest demands. So we can go in and look at a small issue, do something quick. We don't have to wait for a petition and do a whole financial audit of the whole entity. And so it'll, I think it'll increase efficiency there. That's about it. We've also added a reference to chief administrative officer in numerous places throughout the bill, because not all local units of government have a clerk. At some places in Chapter 6, it said the clerk has to do something. Some municipalities have a clerk, but some local governments don't have a clerk. So we've added or chief administrative officer. That's basically what the bill does. We feel it's a cleanup bill, and it helps Chapter 6 function better for us.
Okay. We're pleased to have our state auditor here. Ms. Otter, did you have anything you wanted to add?
This is a great, clean, it's a good bill. It's good government, and it's kind of a technical bill, I think. So I hope it will pass quickly.
Okay. Representative Hillstrom, Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Recently in this committee, we learned that there is another local unit of government that I think many of us didn't realize was in existence, and that is independent volunteer firefighting organizations. They're not mentioned here. Is that a group that you would bring in under this audit responsibility or not?
The independent firefighting corporations would not be included in this. We have oversight over the relief associations related to them, their pension funds, but not those corporations.
Mr. Chair,
Representative,
so I don't know if that sheds any new light on on what we had in this committee before, but that's an interesting question anyway.
Indeed it is. Representative Hillstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly can chat with the auditor's office to see if that is something that we feel as a, that we need to have under them or not. We'll have some discussion.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions from members? Is there anyone here who wants to give testimony about this bill? Gentleman over here. Could you please give your name to the committee?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Ray Bone. I'm here representing the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts, and I'm pleased to indicate that we fully support this legislation. We believe it's a good piece of legislation. It brings consistency and flexibility to our financial responsibilities, and we believe that's extremely helpful. I think most of the provisions we already basically comply with, have been complying with, You know, the for example, the lobbyist provision, we've been disclosing for our purposes the association since the beginning of the present law, and I believe mostly all the watershed districts, the ones that do have lobbyists, have been doing the same thing. So generally, I just wanted to go on record as supporting this as a very good piece of legislation, and we appreciate the author bringing it forward.
Any questions for Mr. Bowen? Okay. Representative Hillstrom, would you like to renew your motion?
I would renew my motion that it be recommended to pass and be re-referred to finance with the recommendation that it go to state government finance.
Any more discussion? Okay, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes.
All right, members, we are going to put Representative Shumper's bill on the next agenda. He has agreed. Aye. And we are going to bring back up Representative House's bill. So Representative House is going to make a motion to remove his bill from the table.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I would move that we take House File 269 from the table, and we'll do that first.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Then
we'll
take my other motion.
All right.
The motion is to take Representative House's motion from the table. I don't think we need discussion on that.
Nope.
So, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Motion passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would renew my motion that House File 269
as
be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. And just for the record, I have talked to Chairman Pawlowski. We have dealt with this bill in amendment form in his committee. He does not like to see it again.
Okay. We have a motion.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lanning.
Mr. Chairman, as amended, correct?
Thank you. As amended. Thank you.
Any further discussion?
I just want to say for the record that I have talked to Representative Lanning, and he will talk to his members, and if there is an issue, then we would take care of it before the floor. Yeah.
Okay. Any more discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes.
And then we're adjourned.
And I guess we're adjourned.